Welcome to the second episode of the New England Holstein Podcast. Today's episode of the New England Holstein Podcast is sponsored by Robeth Holsteins. You're invited to a unique opportunity April 27th to buy from 40 years of Robeth breeding. This is a 30-year PBR herd, seed stock with Dunlogan roots, grazed on the same pastures since the 1950s. The legacy of Liberty Hill, Robeth's finest. Held at the farm April 27th at 11 a.m. The sale's managed by the Alliance of Tim Abbott and Chris Hill. 100 lots will sell. Live auction with Cowbuyer for online sales. Many fresh cows from sand-bedded freestalls, special heifers with show potential backed by powerful pedigrees. Joining us today, we have Dave Kennett of Robeth Holsteins, Liberty Hill Farm, and Karen Wheatley of Premier Select Sires. The goals for this podcast for the New England Holstein are connecting members with ongoing activities in New England through member guests and stories, celebrating the rich history of the association and innovative current members. The mission statement of the New England Holstein Association indicates that it's a member association dedicated to encouraging the breeding and raising of registered Holsteins, and this podcast intends to provide resources towards those ends while increasing member connectedness. Our initial episode was fully sponsored by the New England Holstein Association, but future episodes, such as this one, will offer additional advertising opportunities. Our host today is, well, me, Betsy Bullard of Breeding Farms at Turner, Maine. In 1944, the Executive Committee of the New England Holstein Association approved a four-page bulletin to be managed by the Program and Publicity Committee, which later became the Breed Promotion Committee. The first New England Holstein bulletin, bearing the subtitle New England, the Cradle of Purebred Seed Stock, was published that May. Headlines included Old Posh is Dead, New England members of the 100,000-pound club, Hampshire Franklin meeting, and prefixes recently reserved. It's interesting to note the last headline covering the period January 1, 1943 to March 15, 1944, included the prefixes Gold Top, the Ingrahams in Maine, Howakers, the Howes in Vermont, and Leekal, the Caldwells in Maine. R. DeWitt Mallory, then president of the association, wrote for this first issue, "This bulletin is intended for the benefit of members of the New England States Holstein Friesian Association. We hope you will use its columns to advantage, sending in news of your herd and items of dairy management that may interest other members. Our association exists for the purpose of helping each other and will prosper depending on how much each of us contributes to our common well-being." The bulletin continued until 2005, edited by Marion Seifert, and I think both members and readers far and wide eagerly anticipated that blue publication and sat on kitchen tables all around, and everyone enjoyed receiving that. In 2005, the association moved to an annual publication and a series of newsletters for members. This gives a bit of a framework of what was happening in the association, and our goal for today's podcast is to talk with our guests, Karen and Dave, about their experiences in the ever-changing world of marketing and what that looks like today. As you can hear from the association's history, we went from a bulletin stretching from 1944 to 2005 to our current usage of website, social media, and here we are in our second iteration of the podcast. I'm going to turn it over to Karen for a few minutes to let us know a little bit about her background and where some of those marketing experiences have changed over time, bringing her to her role today, and just never to assume that everyone knows Karen. Many of our members likely know Karen, remember Karen, have interacted with Karen from her Holstein World days and guiding many of us through lots of advertising adventures. So Karen, I'm going to turn it over to you, and as we go, Dave, don't be shy and work in some of your experiences with advertising and marketing, and thanks again for being our inaugural member breeder sponsor of a podcast.
Thank you, Betsy, for including us in this advertising. We appreciate it.
Well, I wanted to say thanks for having me on to begin with, because I never really appreciated working at Holstein World, or really this is like in life, you don't appreciate what you have until you no longer have that. And while I enjoy my job right now with Premier Select Sires, the 11 years I spent at Holstein World was pretty cool. And it changed a lot. It gave me opportunities I never thought I would ever have in my life. But I'll back up. I'm getting ahead of myself, which I can do, right, Betsy? I do that. I grew up Karen Knutson, and I grew up in Rising Sun, Maryland, which is where I have ended up back again. So it's funny how you come full circle. Spent 11 years at The World and worked with what I still consider one of the best marketing and advertising teams of all time, with Carol Moyer, Julie Brown, Sarah Schmidt, Megan Herberg was there, Kathleen O'Keefe, Frank Putman, Kelly Driver was there when I first started. Gosh, to be around that level of passion for an industry was just wild. And it changed so much in those 11 years. Not only the faces behind the magazine, but the process of what we did. You know, when I first started, Janet Crest was still there, and she was in charge of our photo library, which had hundreds of thousands of pictures that in filing cabinets. She had them all organized. She had a corner in the office in East Syracuse that had everything alphabetized. We also had several filing cabinets in a back room. So if you couldn't find something in the first 100,000 photos, you could go back to the back room and search through them. But it was so cool to be able to do any kind of history work with The World, because not only did you have every single issue of The World in that office, you know, bound in bound issues, all these pictures, and on each picture, it was written what magazine it was used in and what year. And so, you know, some of the more famous cows had been used over and over again. There was even pictures there with overlays on them. So when they really did the original form of printing, and it was just cool. And so I was really fortunate to be able to come in kind of at the tail end of that and on the first part of the digital age. And, you know, we still publish The World every month. We were fortunate enough to work with New England Holstein Association to do the annual and just create those stories that celebrate everything that happened within the year in New England Holstein. I thought that was the best part of the job, was to tell the stories of people, whether it was in an actual article or in an advertisement, you're still telling a story. And to see the current of advertisers kind of change and see the ebb and flow of advertisers. But, you know, you could tell the change in popular cow families, or the change in how you advertise, or the change in the people that were having all the sales, and the, you know, it was a neat time. And we traveled a lot. We got to meet a lot of people, go a lot of places. Big E will always be one of my very favorite places to go. It was hard as time went on to watch that platform change so much, because a bit old-fashioned in the sense that I still like to read a book. I don't have everything on my phone, thankfully. I love magazines. I just wanted that to continue. And I wanted, you know, I knew we would never go back to publishing The World twice a month like they did back when I was a kid. You know, I was really excited when we would get 100 pages in an issue, or when we would get a new contract, you know, to work with you guys and put an annual in with it, or some other special section. And I really love that. And I know that change happens all the time. You either go with it or you don't. But I think it was hard for me to start feeling that change happening as social media was taking off, as people were doing their own advertising. And I can't blame them. We have to go with the changes. We have to be on the forefront of technology. But I'm kind of an old sap, and I just love those magazine days.
I think that was great. Thank you, Karen. And I think your comments really speak to the value of those communication pieces that we've utilized over time. You know, think of the foresight that our kind of original directors and president of the New England Association had to form that bulletin in 1944. Mm-hmm. And this, I had the opportunity, we're putting together some kind of historical artifacts for an auction this summer. And in someone's collection, there's a book that's called Selling Purebreds for Profit. Some members of my family that live in my house were super excited that there would be the keys to vast profits in this book. But the authors of the book were Theodore Prescott, who was the advertising manager of the Holstein Friesian World. Alan Crissy was a field man for Holstein Friesian Association of America. And Dr. J.W. Bartlett was the head of the Department of Dairy Husbandry, the New Jersey Agricultural Experiment Station. And it was really fascinating because there's a foreword that includes, these purebreds were bred and developed by capable men and women who love animals of grace and beauty. The type and production of their cattle is reaching higher and higher levels, permitting buyers to become more selective and insistent upon knowing the facts of type and production, as well as the integrity of the seller. It was fascinating to read some of the tips and and tricks that these gentlemen had in 1958 that are things that we still see today in our saw in our publications of the Bulletin and saw in the Holstein world and continue to see in many of the avenues that breeders are using to advertise today. Dave, if you wouldn't mind maybe touching a little bit on some of your, you folks were longtime advertisers in the Bulletin and continued as we association made the not easy transition to an annual format.
So we've been doing registered Holsteins for about 40 years, and we participated in the New England Bulletin from sometime in the 80s, and we had modest means of what our ads were in the 80s. We kind of focused on production at that point. And the cows we have today, the type and the marketability and the photos that we have today are light years ahead of what we originally started with the New England Bulletin. Monthly participants, the $87 half-page ad was bread and butter. What you could get for $87 back then. And now you look at the cost of advertising today, it's the New England Bulletin was quite a deal. But we participated in the Bulletin up and through 2005, and then, of course, went on to the Holstein World for their annual. We always had an ad in that. An interesting tidbit with Karen talking about the Holstein World's collection of having every Holstein World. My father actually has Mrs. Mallory's Holstein World collection from sometime in the 20s through the 70s. And
That's amazing. He has an
extensive Holstein World collection that's in the attic in his man cave that he views every once in a while when he has some nostalgia about some cow he might have seen on Facebook and remembered way back and would go look her up in those Holstein Worlds.
That's cool.
It's, yeah, it's an interesting historical artifact. Keep that collection intact and alive. Our marketing progressed from New England Bulletin to Holstein Annuals to now we use our Facebook. Now we have a pretty active Facebook page to try to keep some updates on. And with our sale coming up, we've tried to push that and use that as our marketing arm now as technology and Facebook has come alive. It seems like the dairy industry is pretty focused on Facebook. I'm not an Instagram guy or a TikTok guy or any of that. So,
and I think your stories, as well as Karen, really highlights the people end of the business and the people end of the merchandising. I when we think of iconic folks, the work that Marion Seifert did with the New England Bulletin, I mean, they're hand in hand. I certainly don't think that freestanding magazine would have been nearly as successful or lasted even to 2005 without. You know, without her guidance.
Right. Marion Seifert, you know, as a kid, she'd call every once in a while and tell us we were late submitting our proof for our ad. And, you know, I'm a 12-year-old kid here. Dad, what are we going to do? You know, and I was completely involved in that, writing ads and proofing ads and sending them to Marion. And Marion was, you know, a huge help to us to try to facilitate our ads and having them in the New England Bulletin. We really appreciate Marion and all the effort and work and her due diligence to keep the New England Bulletin going as long as it did.
And she probably faxed you a proof, didn't she?
Absolutely.
That used to be high tech. I remember Carol Moyer standing at the fax machine just zipping them through.
Spoiler, my mom still has a fax. We're not exactly sure why, but just in case.
Yeah, just in case. Mom and Dad do as well. Yeah.
And I think it's that level of connection and that desire for connection amongst members that really was kind of some of the driving conversations around making sure that our New England Association website and Facebook presence and these podcasts give us another opportunity to connect people. In person is always kind of the gold standard kind of thing. But since we've all survived a little bit of not necessarily in person, we've come up with some other ways.
Well, I was just going to say, and I don't know how this fits in with our conversation, but I think one of the coolest things about the New England Holstein Association was it was indicative of the way the industry was going to go before the industry knew that it was going to go that way. And what I mean by that is that you have all these established breeders, like longtime breeders. How many established, like longtime established families were in New England that bred cows that had those beautiful freestall barns or tie stall barns with the pine siding and the, you know, everything that we dream of when we were kids. But it also was a very interesting, I don't know, nurturing bed for all these kids that didn't grow up on farms. Like when Cowtown had the very first youth clinic there, they had a bunch of kids coming from Massachusetts, I remember, that had never ever seen a cow before or never experienced. They were in 4-H clubs or, you know, junior Holstein, but that was their first time really clipping or, you know, learning how to wash an animal. And I just think back on that because I remember that very seminar and thinking, oh my gosh, this is a bunch of city kids, you know, and how cool is this that they get to learn all this? And now you see it everywhere. Like it would just, it just happened first. And it's such an interesting mix of Robeth and the Clark Woodmanseys and the, you know, all the junipers of the world, the Briggses that have been in this, doing this for so long, along with these city kids.
We've seen it in our situation where we have a diverse business where we have the bed and breakfast that my mother takes in folks from the city and also the farm and like also local kids who maybe it's their first job throwing hay bales or cleaning stalls or feeding calves and they may not have any dairy experience or farm experience and we teach them how to drive a tractor. But then they all of a sudden, our current project is one of the kids that grew up in Rochester in town with no dairy experience is now managing a 1,000 cow robot dairy. And he's got things pinpointed. He's a numbers guy. He's a details guy. And he's gone on and done great things. He's managing a 1,000 cow dairy on robots and from humble beginnings, but his interest in cows and he's interested in registered cows. He's actually running our recipient program for our IVFs. They're putting eggs in for us and bringing some of those calves back here to Robeth Holsteins. Cody's been instrumental to us from when he was a high schooler, you know, throwing hay bales to now he's a part of the business plan. One example, there's more. But taking those kids that don't have dairy experience or ag experience and then really enlightening them to how big the dairy industry can be and the different, whether you're in marketing, doing ads for Holstein World or managing dairies, the industry has many different opportunities.
I think that's how New England Holstein has remained so viable is that you've just changed and adapted. And it's just a neat process to see that happen.
I'm scanning over my notes here and I'm struck by the fact that in the words of Mr. Mallory back in 1944, our association exists for the purpose of helping each other and will prosper depending on how much each of us contributes to our common well-being. What a common thread throughout that many years of activities with the association and our members. I mean, it's not a slogan. It's what our members actually do. In our last episode, definitely tried to set the bar high and gave our listeners a homework assignment. And our homework assignment for listeners was to name an iconic New England cow. And I'm going to share with you one of our responses. And this is from Heather Richardson of Massachusetts. And she had not one, but two. So clearly she's an overachiever student, which we definitely appreciate. So her two cows were Breguine Integrity Robin, excellent 95, Brood Cow Extraordinaire, bred by one of our finest New England herds and developed by another of our most iconic herds, Conan Acres. The other made New England her home and the home of Woodmansee Holsteins, yet another of New England's premier herds, Quality Rich Stormy Hazel, excellent 96, dubbed America's Sweetheart and one of my personal favorite cows of all time. So we're gonna keep that homework assignment. And Karen and Dave, if either of you had an iconic New England cow or even just an iconic cow in your years of breeding and marketing that stood out to you as either emblematic of some of your goals or just, geez, that's really cool. I wish that cow was mine.
I have a favorite cow that I would love to have owned was Bullcrest Sterling Silver. Every time I saw that cow, she just got better and better with time. And I just love those big black cows. I thought she was great. One of the ones that I know we had fun with at the World with all the advertising was Alita Skybug Lucy. Yeah, right?
Yep.
I was like, did I leave out part of her name? No. Anyway, she was just an amazing cow as well. And I think that longevity for me is one of the telltale signs of a great cow, you know, that can stay in the herd, that can make calves to sell, that can make embryos to sell, that's trouble-free. You know, I sound like I'm doing a commercial for Select Sires, but you get the idea. Like, that's what I talk about at work. But what I, if I was still milking cows myself, that would be, I'd love to have a herd of cows whose average age was 6 or higher.
We love longevity in our herd too. And one cow that stands out for me again is a silky black cow, Eldor Saber Pansy, 95 points. Pansy was a sweetheart of a cow. When I was a teenager, we'd go to Lyle Haven and do judging clinics, and they would always bring her out. Not the biggest cow, not the most extreme cow, but light years ahead in the modern dairy balance, super uddered, super legged, silky. I think she had a lot of fans. Definitely Eldor Saber Pansy's a imprint in my head.
Pretty cool list of cows that we're amassing here as we go. And we'll definitely be interested to hear more suggestions as more of our members respond and send us over their iconic cows. What else do either of you have for nuggets of wisdom going forward in the brave new world of marketing now that we're less publication based and more making it up as we go?
One thing we discuss as a family at times is how do we document stuff that's shared on Facebook? You know, it's in your news feed today and gone tomorrow. These Holstein Worlds, it's printed material that you can look at the back of the photo and see which magazine the cow was used in. But with Facebook, it's just come and goes. And there's no real way to research something. That's technology. It's change. It's moving forward, but maybe not always in a positive. I don't know what your opinions are.
I agree. I think I was going to say, remember to keep telling your story or keep documenting your story. I didn't grow up in New England, but I was fortunate enough to have some great friends that still live there. And I was fortunate enough to work with Sue Brown at Lyle Haven when they were in their showing days. It was just fun to document those stories with pictures. And like you said, Dave, like Facebook is here today, gone tomorrow, but at some point, someone will want to know your story, whether that's even somebody that comes to your sale and buys something next month or buys, you know, 2 or 3 cows while they're at it. I think we'll never lose that passion for storytelling. You know, right now it seems very flippant, kind of, you know, like just everybody has good cows and it doesn't really matter. I think that's where you distinguish yourself above your competition is when you can tell your story, when people understand your story. And the more we have to connect directly to customers that may not have grown up knowing about, you know, the New England Bulletin or Horace Backus or, you know, any of the things that we just take for granted, you need that story. I don't know exactly how to do that, except like my phone is full of pictures and I tend not to throw away sale catalogs or show catalogs or even old issues of the World and the Bulletin I still have here. And I don't know, you know, we don't know what future generations are going to do and what trends come back around. Will print publications come back around? They might. It won't be in the same way that we were used to when we were kind of in our prime. Having all that story to tell is what people are going to crave and they want.
Thank you both for telling some pretty cool stories. And I think those are the things that we all look forward to is telling those stories, telling the stories of our cows and people that we associate with those cows and the ones that we've had the great good fortune to meet because of those cows. So keep telling those stories. We'll look forward to more stories. I would be remiss in not reminding folks of what the upcoming events are here in April. We have the Northeast All Breed Spring Show, and that's April 17th through the 20th. We'll have everything from a junior day, the Northeast Spring Spectacular Sale, and that's managed by Michael Wolf and the Wolf Group. And we'll have Red and White and Black and White Holstein Show on April 19th and April 27th, the Legacy of Liberty Hill Sale, Liberty Hill Farm, Rochester, Vermont, and managed by the Alliance. Thanks again for joining us for the second edition of the New England Holstein Podcast. I'm your host, Betsy Bullard of Breguin Farms, Turner, Maine. Find us at nesholsteins.com. And don't forget to send in those iconic New England cow stories for next month's episode.